Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Heumann for our end of year, I suppose, even though we said it last time. This definitely is it now, John. Is it the end of the year sort of Vox screen stocks?
It is, yeah. So have a look at the best and worst of 2022.
Okay, and you've put some criteria in there, what they're forecast to be profitable as well, is that right?
Yeah, so basically I just had a look at the best performing shares, the worst performing shares, and then just to filter out sort of the more speculative stuff that isn't expected to make money next year, I've just put a forecast PE filter in just so that we know that they're actually still profitable to some degree next year. Otherwise, the list is dominated, as you would expect, at the top by essentially speculative oil and gas and mining explorers.
Yeah, it isn't us looking at the sort of best performers or worst performers. They are sort of, you know, resource oil and gas companies, pre-revenue or story stocks pretty much, you know. They're very volatile, you know. You can say you can be up 50% one day and down 25% the next day. So it's not nice. And of course, story stocks compared to, you know, stocks based on fundamentals, which hopefully is more smooth, sustainable rise over a longer period of time.
Exactly.
But in this list, I see top performer here is Lode Kreschik, which I know Paul Hill's been talking about a bit because he owns that, and they've just had a buyout offer in there of £4.01, I think it was. The one pence is important.
That's right, yeah. So this was Northbridge Industrial Services, changed its name.
Yeah.
It's sort of remote power. Mm. And they've got bought by the other big, formerly listed remote power player, Aggreko.
Yeah.
So, but I think Paul's rationale is a good one anyway, that, you know, we're in this sort of era of energy concerns, to put it mildly, these kind of solutions are going to be in demand. That was Paul's rationale, and it really has paid off.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know much about, you know, I interviewed the main guy from the Kreschik a while back, and this is before they had a rise. And I always, look at companies, but I didn't really understand what they did. And it's one of the things where I remember saying that looks undervalued just based on a sales multiple. It looks undervalued, and so. But it's one of the things where sometimes you have option paralysis, where you have too many stocks you're looking at, and you take your eye off the ball on one of them. And I remember them just, you know, after I'd interviewed them a week later, they came up with a trading update, and literally they did about 26%. Oh, 16%, that's what it was, 16% in one day, and then they started just going uphill then. I thought, that's one I should have paid more attention to, but there's plenty of those around. But I suppose, you know, so it's funny, I remember looking back at the best performers a while back, a couple of years ago, and the best performer of one year is never the best performer for the next year, or anyway in top 10. So you'll be careful that, companies like that who've rallied very strongly in one year, be careful. But in fact, it won't be the case if it's taken out. But
you won't have to worry about this. I think you're right, and that's why I think, you know, those sort of speculative explorers that are at the top of the list without the PE filter, without the profitability filter, I wouldn't imagine that would repeat. And likewise, this is why I wanted to look at the worst performers as well, because actually, you know, there's some good, decent companies here. That, you know, so a lot of consumer facing stuff. Yeah, they have had a very, very bad year. Are they going to have as bad a year again next year? That's the big question. And that's why I thought it's perhaps worth a look at some of these. I mean, I've got some really interesting stats across the whole.
Go on, go for it.
So, this is quite incredible. So there are 1,459 stocks that have been trading for a whole year on the market. Of those, 323 would have made you money. 1,111 would have lost you money. So, you know, very hard to pick a winner this year. And if you got it wrong, the average loss across the market is 21.2%. And the weighted average loss So given we've had some really good performers among the very largest companies, is only 6.6%. So very bad year, you would infer from that, for small caps.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's been really tough.
A 1 in 3 chance, pretty much, of making money if you'd, you know, sort of, yeah. So it is a bit sort of, yeah. But do you know what? It's like I was looking at the AIM All Share Index. It's now over 470 days since its high. Which is, you know, we are now in average, in, or just beyond the average territory, I think, for a sort of bear market. So AIM has been this, but it's, you know, it's, and I don't think we're going to rally out with Santa, but I do think in the next 6 months we may see a change in sentiment. And it's almost like we've been battered with a fear by media, and everyone's sort of tightened their belts. And I don't think the media understand, you know, what, you know, what will happen to that. If everyone sort of listened to the media and the news, that, oh, okay, let's stop using this or stop buying that, everything's getting very expensive, millions of households slow their spending habits down. That is a remarkably knock-on effect to the rest of the economy, you know?
Yeah.
And so almost like, you know, this behaviour, we change our behaviour and almost conforms. You almost talk yourself into a recession. I mean, obviously there are companies that will be affected, but I mean, yeah, I think will the, I think it gets to a stage where we become a bit blasé about the fear a little bit then. You can't keep being scared by it for a long period of time. And after a while, you start, so what? And so I think sentiment, will, the fear will ease, I think, over the next few months. And then you start seeing a bit of good news, because all we've had is bad news. We've had no good news at all.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, you know, I mean, the media does like a horror story, you know, bad news sells.
Yeah.
You know, and we know that. You know, sort of social media companies, they have in the past promoted sort of stories that provoke argument above everything else, because it encourages engagement. So yeah, the media has a role, but equally, you know, central banks, they want to slow spending.
Yes, they do, exactly.
To get inflation back under control. And you know, the balancing act they've got is obviously they don't want to cause a massive recession, but they do want people to start to slow their spending to a degree.
Yeah. The trouble is, it will cause a recession.
Indeed.
It's a fine line.
It's an impossible balancing act.
Yeah. So when looking at these companies, I'm still, you know, edging on the side of caution. I mean, there's two lists, like I said, the best performers and the worst performers. And there's quite a few in there, you know, attractive. Things like, I mean, it's done very well, is like U Group. And in fact, you wouldn't have thought Shoe Zone would have done so well, but I suppose people need shoes. But
yeah, Shoe Zone popped out quite a few screens.
Yeah, they have.
It's a really nice little company. I mean, you know, as you say, people need shoes. You know, this is not a company, not a shop for the fashion conscious end of the market. But not everyone is fashion conscious. People, you know, a lot of people just need, they buy what they need. And that's what Shoe Zone sells. And actually, as a business, you know, it's very, very well run. You know, they never, and this is a mistake lots of retailers make, get themselves tied up in big store estates on long leases, and then they hit a downturn. And they basically can't afford to pay their rent. And Shoe Zone is, you know, very nimble. So they've moved. They keep their leases short. That gives them the flexibility to move when they find a better location. And they've been moving their estate from sort of high street stores into big box formats, which they've been able to, you know, acquire relatively cheaply. And it just gives a massive flexibility. And you know, they're still cheap. Those shares trade on a forecast PE of 12, which, you know, it's not cheap, given it, the sector it's in, but you know, it's not expensive either. I think that's a nice little company.
Yeah.
Will continue to do well.
Yeah, well, I mean, considering it's, you know, up 93% this year, and they're not expensive, and that says how undervalued they were, I suppose. There's Ashtead Technology, there's Appreciate Group, H&T Group, you understand, i3 Energy there, which oil and gas, in fact, I'm going to interview them very soon, producing, of course, and oil and gas prices quite high. Zoo Digital, I quite like them, but they shot up as well. But do you know what? Out of all of them, I'm going to have to, I mean, Equals is in there. What are you going for, John?
I mean, I'd go for H&T. You know, given what we've just talked about in terms of the kind of the gloomy narrative, but which actually reflects a gloomy reality. You know, H&T is basically a pawnbroker. So you know, when times are tough, people sort of trade in their jewelry, gold, and you know, just to keep their keep the household budget ticking over. So H&T is, you know, in the right place for this kind of tough environment.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing a real, you know, decline in living standards, rise in household expenses, savings, household savings are actually declining now, you know, following the sort of pandemic boom in savings. Yeah. You know, lots of people having to borrow money to pay their bills. So I just think, you know, sad though it is, this is a company that, you know, is in the right place at the right time.
Yeah. Well, do you know, I looked at, in that sort of area, I suppose, but distressed area, I did look at Begbie's trend this morning, and it's very good growth on the half year and all that stuff. And but then I looked at the broker forecast, and it seems to think the growth will dip a little bit. And I thought, what's going on there then? It's odd. But then go back, yeah. I think 2023 growth was a dip, and then 2024 this year going back up again. I don't know why that was, and I didn't read through the note, just look at the figures. But but I mean, I think they're going to be busy, aren't they? Yeah, they're going to be busy. Yeah, I
like Begbie's trainer. You know, they obviously, you know, a sort of zero interest rate world is not good for a company like them, which is, you know, deals in corporate insolvency. But those shares been rising now for a few years, you know, steadily on the up.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's probably, you know, one can imagine in anticipation of the moment like this. But they publish this research, they call it red flag research, which
yes.
is about sort of, you know, canonical judgments, which are an indicator of insolvencies. You know, the number of companies that they're seeing that are in critical financial distress, and you know, it, again, you know, on the up and up. And as I say, as companies start to struggle, you know, we have this sort of strange situation where there are sort of more vacancies than can be filled.
Yeah.
But actually, I think this is the calm before the storm when actually companies really do start to sort of cut back on hiring or just disappear altogether.
Yeah.
And again, that then follows through into that H&T narrative. You know, if companies aren't hiring, if people are, you know, losing their jobs and struggling, you know, they're going to have to find a way to keep the lights on, as it were.
Yeah.
So it sort of follows down that chain to H&T. I mean, it's horrible. It's horrible. Mm. But I just think as an investor, you know, that's what we are. Look, we are looking for things that meet the needs of the market at a particular point in time. H&T, yeah. Begbie's, that sector. Horrible though it is, it's you know, it's in a sweet spot.
Well, it's obviously, you know, it's a contrarian play is on the economy. The economy, they do well when the economy doesn't do so well. So I mean, it's almost a hedge on that, isn't it? Really, I suppose you know, a deteriorating economy.
The other thing about H&T, which I think is quite interesting, you know, they're taking jewellery often as on their pledge books.
And the gold price is going up now.
Gold price has been somewhat suppressed. You know, they're sitting on gold, so they're actually going to be, you know, a beneficiary if we see a rise in gold price, which you generally see an inverse correlation with the dollar. And you know, the dollar's had a very, you know, powerful year, but the dollar is actually rolling over now. That it's losing that strength. That's good for the gold price.
Yeah, well, yesterday, I think it was, I got a chart alert on gold. It hit $18.25. And it's almost like it's trying to get above that level. But on a sort of just moving average level, the 50-day is crossing the 100-day, which is the start of an uptrend. And the price is above the 200-day, so it may be, you know, heading upwards. So that's good for them, I suppose. Yeah.
Mm. There is actually one more string to H&T's bow, which I'd forgotten to mention, which is foreign exchange. So they do foreign exchange.
Okay.
So you know, I mean, this is again, it's sort of a bit of a bit contrarian, but you know, even though household spending is under pressure, I think the one thing that people are going to be reluctant to give up in the year ahead is their summer holiday.
Yeah. Oh, you know, exactly. You know, I'm thinking that already. The weather we've had recently, I want to leave this country for a long time. Yeah,
quite. So they're going to be a beneficiary of that as well. You know, you're seeing it across the travel sector. I mean, Jet2, yeah, had a horrible few years, but they're on the way up as well. Which they're a good low cost, you know, travel operator. So that travel sector, there's none on this their best performance this year, unsurprisingly. But that could have a good year in 2023, just mainly because the world is reopening again. And again, H&T just benefits from that through its foreign exchange business.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I did look at last week on the webinar on the beach, because they've been hammered, and and generally they have a decent amount of cash, and you know, I think they have a hard time during COVID, of course, but they're a kind of portal, so you know, they've got decent margins, if I recall, but the sort of, you know, a recovery slot, let's say. You've got to have a bit of patience, but it's worth just keep monitoring, you know. So, well, do you know what? Talking about foreign countries, I'm going to have to go with, I'm sort of talking about my own book a little bit, but I mean, why wouldn't I, you know, talk about it if I own it? And that's Argentex. I just think they get excellent growth. Their margins are very good, and they're just starting to scale a bit now. And I think they'll just improve. And you know, they provide hedging for companies that, have, of course, trade around the world, different currencies. And I think they're just, you know, they are getting into their sweet spot of really being able to scale their offering, and just the growth. They're profitable, you know, a bit of a dividend. And yeah, starting up trends, and I think they can go further than this. I think he was saying, there was an interview with Paul actually on the thing, but saying they could probably double their profits the next year or so, you know. So yeah, I quite like Argentex.
I mean, if they're saying that they could double their profits, I mean, the forecast in the market, we're only looking for a 13% EPS growth. So basically, wow. you've got a re-rating, much higher, you know, EPS upgrade story here potentially as well.
Yeah.
And you know, market loves an EPS upgrade story.
Yeah, yeah. I do think this time I didn't take a massive position in them at all, but they rose very quickly, and it's one of the things where I'll just wait, and they went up again. I said, I'll wait. They went up again, and but it's, at one point, it's having a problem getting over 125. They're going to roll over a little bit and consolidate. And then they come up with a trading update again, and it shot up by about 12%. And then, oh, my word. So I think they're sooner or later they're going to consolidate until we get confirmation, I think, of that you know, improved, or that runway of improved profitability. But, yeah, they've got everything in place at scale, and, you know, very efficient business, good margins, and there's obviously growth there. So I quite like it. And so,
Yeah, I do.
So Argentex, in fact, there's another one we looked at as well, doing very well, this appeared on the screens, is Record. They're also, they're very strong in that sort of area. I don't know, I've not really looked at them much. They came up on a screener recently. And again, their chart is very similar to Argentex. They broke out same time, and they're sort of, you know, trying to break sort of a 95 pence. But yeah, two very similar companies. But
well, you do get that. I mean, you know, where you've got companies that are sort of similar in similar sectors, doing similar things, you know, you tend to get that sort of clustered performance. You know, if one starts doing well, you start to see the other follow, or vice, yeah. You know. It's
always
worth looking out for.
Okay, well, those are the ones that are doing well. Let's pick ones from the ones that are not doing so well. What are you going for? Just a couple of things on here. It's, Cineworld, Inspex Group, Naked Wines, there's Strict Restaurant Group, Audio Boom, Cake Box, Virgin Wines. Go. What are you going for, John?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty motley looking list, I have to say. You know, I mean, I am actually struggling looking at this list to really, you know, pull out something that I think is going to be resilient in what's you know, a tough consumer market next year, because a lot of them, as I say, are consumer facing. You know, of all of them, I think I'd have to go for Strix. You know, it's had a terrible year. You know, but this was a real investor favorite. You know, it's got basically provides the sort of the components for kettles to essentially, it's a safety component to stop overboiling, you know, blowing up, whatever a kettle would do if it didn't switch itself off. And you know, they had a big tailwind, you know, regulatory tailwind. You know, apparently, you know, the UK's kettles are built to a higher standard than kettles elsewhere in the world. So, you know, they really had a big market to grow into, and they've just you know, they've disappointed a few times. And when that happens, shares tend to, you know, come off quite sharply. People don't forgive after the second and third profit warnings.
No.
But you've still got the fundamentally good business here that people bought into, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. But you can now buy them for 8 times forward earnings. So you know, it's had a horrible time, but it's still a good company. So I would come back to that and say, yeah, perhaps that's worth keeping an eye on. As you say, it's a recovery play, but one that, you know, it still has the same drivers behind it that it had before.
So what are they? 190 million market cap. Just looking, they raised 13 million in October, didn't they? By the looks of it, by a placing. So
yeah,
they've got some cash there. And their profit reached 122, operating profit 12.9 million on revenue of 50.7 million. Okay. Yeah, there's a bit of a 7% change drop in there. the thing, but net debt 61. Okay,
it's not. The numbers aren't great, but then also not terrible. You know, it's not growing particularly quickly, but equally, you know, this is not a company that's on the cusp of collapse. It's a motley list. But I would rather go for something that, you know, a widget supplier than something that was directly exposed to a consumer.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I've mentioned them before, actually. I don't hold any, but I've been keeping an eye on Madetech, and they're the provider of digital data and technology services to the UK public sector. And I can't, you know, what stood out to me, they caught my eye when they announced, so they are 33 million market cap. They announced a new £10 million contract with the Home Office in November. And I thought, oh, hang on, what's this company then? And look at the results. The revenue up from 13.3 to 29.3 million, 120% growth there. And the adjusted, profit before tax, 2.3 million. So they are sort of profitable. They've got about 12 million of cash. So they're profitable, got cash. They're valued at about 33 million. Obviously, EV is a lot less. They've got no debt there. And I'm just thinking this is not the first contract they've had with the big. What was the other one? Isn't it driving DVLA? I think it was. So obviously, a major new contract with the NHS Digital. So this was a consortium 2-year contract worth 37.5 million. So obviously, neatly knitted into that, you know, infrastructure. And I suppose one of the hardest things is to get into those public bodies. Once you're in there and you're a trusted provider, it's a lot easier. So I can't, you know, these contracts, I assume, would be quite sticky. They can probably win some others. There was talk about some defence contracts, or they're in chats with Department of Defence as well. So I quite like that those kind of departments, you know, they don't, their spending is not going to sort of decrease massively, are they? You know, public contracts, they're quite steady and stable. So I quite like that. And I think they're overvalued. I mean, if you look at the broker forecasts, they're saying it'll go from 29 top line to 43 million, then 50 in 2024, just a pre-tax profit of 2.3 to 3.4 for 2023 and 4.1 for 2024. So I quite like it. They've been hammered. I don't know the story, but I'm assuming they came to the market with a bit of a hoopla, because they're listed around 140, another 22 pence a share. So they're not burning cash. They've got plenty of cash, and they've got seemingly, you know, long-term sticky contracts, which I quite like, in an area where I don't think is going to be affected much by a downturn, you know?
Yeah, you would expect, you know, government spending is going to stay strong. I mean, as you mentioned infrastructure, you mentioned defence, and,
yeah,
you know, I think defence and, you know, any kind of big government project that sort of, you know, it does keep the economy ticking over, you know, is a good place to be. So we talked about it before. I think I pointed to Severfield as a beneficiary potentially of what I believe is going to be a big infra splurge that comes in the years ahead. I mean, when I started in the city, I was a software analyst, software and computer services. So I'm always a bit wary of companies like this. Government contracts, you know, they sound massive when they're awarded.
Yeah.
The trick, and a place where a lot of companies often fall over, is that they essentially underbid. Overbid, which way around it is. So basically, you know, do these contracts deliver as much profitability as the company selling them hope they're going to deliver? You know, it's all about the execution.
Yeah,
and
there is
the potential for these contracts to go over budget. You know, big IT projects are really, really difficult. On the face of it, this looks, the numbers look great. You know, the sector looks great. The customer base is fantastic. All about the execution. So I've just think you've got to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what? I think one of the stocks we may have covered, and I've put it on the chart, right? I think, I don't know if we did, I don't know where you got it from. I don't know what they really did. They mentioned defence, but I just looked at it because the chart is off the hook there. It's like MS International. Ever heard of those? MSI, they
call it. No.
I mean, I was looking at that, and they've got different, they're in defence, forgings, petrol station superstructures, corporate branding. There's a lot of different, but I think this is the one where their website is the most basic website you've ever seen in your life. It's like done by, it's almost like the CEO's son who's just started building websites. Got to build one for our company, son. And it's that bad. But if you look at the chart, right, literally MSI, and I was like, what the heck?
Something's happened.
Yeah, they're going back in January in 2021, they were 118 a share. They're now 480. And in the last sort of, since December, start of the year, they've gone from 340 to almost 5 quid, and just they've rolled back from 5 quid. But I'll have to look into that. But when I see a company that's rising that fast, I think it just puts me off a bit. And I thought, well, what's going on there? But I'm trying to check out their website and make sure I've got the right company, but I think it's them. But I looked on it. It's literally a one-page thing, and it's probably created in Word or something. But what the heck is going on there? And but worth checking out. I thought, put on my watch list, because when you get a stock that's rallying that strongly, there's something wrong with the supply and demand of the shares. I believe obviously they must be performing, but there must be. I have not checked who's holding the stock. But maybe there's a low float there somewhere, and maybe there's even small buys would push it up. Again, small sells would probably push it down. But there's something going on, I think when you get that kind of momentum in a stock, it's worth looking at it and keeping an eye on it. As long as the fundamentals are good, because it moves very quickly, you know. So
I'm just looking at this the last statement when the shares really really shot upwards on the 7th of December, which and you're right, they don't say a lot. But sometimes these sort of strangely unpromoted companies are where the opportunities lie. And as you rightly say, you know, they're in. Again, in the right sort of sector, defence is unfortunately in for a few good years.
Yeah. In fact, significant shareholders: Michael Bell, 17.5%; Miss Adrienne Bell, which I assume is his wife, his partner, she holds about 14% as well. So maybe it's a founder owner operated company, which are always quite a good look at, because they've got a lot of skin in the game. And it's their reputation as well. So, I don't know where that... But I'm sure it was on one of our screeners. I just looked at it recently. I don't know. But there we are. That's why screeners are handy. You know, they find companies you'd never, ever just, look at. And it makes you look at them, I suppose. But there we are. Are you going to start to invest next year, John?
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah. It's just the question of, when, not if. I do still think there's some market weakness ahead. We haven't really seen a Santa rally this year. In fact, we've actually seen certainly the US market soften a bit in the last week or so, and I think that really reflects where we are. The battle with inflation is not yet done. We've had some very hawkish commentary, particularly from the ECB recently. I think we haven't yet seen the full extent of the earnings recession in sectors outside of those sort of defensive type sectors that have done well this year. I think there's a lot of dust to settle. So, I don't feel, as I've said before, that I'm losing out by not pulling the trigger on stuff now, but my watch list is growing and the time will come. I think before we started recording, Justin, you mentioned ISA season.
Just going back to the great financial crash, everything started rallying in the first quarter. I know it's not the same, but we are now in that period of time. Like I said, we've almost over a year for AIM from the highs. And so, and in fact, we're still in a downtrend. I've got some cash now. I've K3 Capital was a takeover bid. I sold that, and I've sort of trimmed a few others because I want to be in a position to, when we come out of this, bear market, to have some cash, because it's one of the best times ever to make money in the markets, after everything's so dreary and so bearish, all of a sudden it flips and the aggressive rallies are very good. But I was looking at the chart, the S&P, and I tweeted this, and I don't know if you saw this, but it's obviously in a downtrend and it's having a problem getting over that 200-day moving average. And you see people on CNBC getting very bullish, this is the start of the bull market, and I thought, well, it's obviously not, because it can't break that 200-day. And the stats, I put them on the spreadsheet, and I thought, let's have a look at the drops here from the time it attacks the 200-day to the time it drops. Now, it first did it after the initial fall-off. I first attacked the 200-day on the 20th of April, and it hit a new low on the 16th of June. Now, it's 57 days and an 18% drop. Second time it attacked the Tundra in Bavarias was on the 16th of August, new low on the 12th of October, 57 days. Exactly 57, same as the last time, 17% drop. So the drop was only 1% different. The days between peak and trough were exactly the same. Now, if that happens again, which it looks like it is, it's failed again to break that 200-day moving average. It's hit it, and people on CNBC said, we're in for a rally here. I thought, well, no, it's having problems there. It'll be 57 days again will take us to the 26th of January, and the S&P will be 3,300, pretty much, or 3,386. Which is round about the average for bear market for S&P for when if it doesn't go into recession. It's further down if you go into recession. But even that, looking at the chart, if you just, you know, does this thing has done the last twice, the third time, you know, we've got a bit more of a sell-off to go. So I think if you've got cash, take your time, be patient, because like in a bear market, you can afford to take your time. It's in a bull market when it gets away from you, but we are in a bear market, and I think we're still in a downtrend. And these things, like I said, these peaks, troughs, they take almost 57 days. You know, we've just hit a peak in the S&P. So if it just confirms to that or conforms to that, then I think you can take your time at least.
Exactly.
It's good to have a bit of cash, but I'm genuinely excited about the turn. It always turns in the end, you know. But the problems I've always had, I've always got in too early. So I'm trying to learn from that. Don't get in too early. It's better to be a bit late and be right than early than wrong, isn't it?
That's my thesis. Although I must admit, some of the results of the screens that we've sort of uncovered this year, there's been some companies on there that I've liked the look of, and I haven't pulled the trigger, and I do regret not being a little bit more adventurous on the back of some of the discussions that we've had. Yeah. So yeah, it cuts both ways.
Yeah, exactly. Well, do you know what? I think you never go wrong if you're a bit more patient. I need to learn that. You know, get excited about a stock, jump in too early. And, oh my God! And they come up with full results, and it's not panning out as you expect in your head. Oh my word! So there we are. Cheers, Matt. John, have a nice Christmas, and speak in the new year.
Thanks, Justin. Have a great Christmas.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.